I'm Matthew Petty, and this is Intersection. The Dream Defenders staged a 31-day sit-in at the Florida State Capitol calling for the repeal of Stand Your Ground. Now, the Florida legislature is considering changes to the self-defense law. I'll speak with Joshua McConnell, president of the Orlando chapter of the Dream Defenders, about the impact of the sit-in and what the group still hopes to achieve. Also, Democratic gubernatorial challenger Charlie Crist officially announced his candidacy last week. 90.7's political commentators Dick Batchelor and Lou Fry weigh in on the governor's race and other political issues impacting Florida. That's ahead on Intersection. I'm joined in the studio by Joshua McConnell. Joshua is the president of the Dream Defenders chapter at the University of Central Florida. Joshua, thank you for joining me.
Thank you for inviting me.
Well, in the wake of the shooting death of Trayvon Martin, the Dream Defenders have been trying to get lawmakers to pass what's known as Trayvon's Law. Joshua, if you would just explain, what is the law in a nutshell?
Trayvon's Law comprises of three components in particular. The repeal or serious reform of Stand Your Ground, dismantling of racial profiling throughout the state, as well as abolishing the school-to-prison pipeline.
What is the school-to-prison pipeline?
It's essentially the funneling of our youth from the educational system into the juvenile justice system. So this is done through policies such as zero tolerance, where, mm-hmm. you know, when I was in school, I would get referrals or, you know, detention for minor infractions, where kids nowadays are being sent straight to resource officers who have no proper training with kids. So. Mm-hmm.
These are pretty big tasks you're taking on, mm-hmm. the Dream Defenders. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like, as part of this group, that it's like an insurmountable task, or do you feel pretty confident that you can bring about some change?
No, I'm very confident. I think if you look on any of our paraphernalia, we have the word power, right? And every small victory is an increase in our power. And so, you know, once we start off with small victories, we feel that we can accomplish anything. And these are real problems within society. So if, you know, we aren't the ones who's, you know, fighting for this, and we're the ones who are affected by it, who else is going to fight, mm-hmm. you know, these battles? We can't lay, you know, apathetic or lay to the wayside. We have to fight for it. And it's a challenge, but it's a challenge that I think we most definitely can win.
Now, members of your chapter of the Dream Defenders participated in the sit-in in Tallahassee after George Zimmerman was acquitted of that second-degree murder charge down here in Central Florida. And the Dream Defenders were calling for a special legislative session to look into Stand Your Ground laws. You were part of that sit-in yourself?
Yeah.
What was that like?
Wow. It was definitely something that I can tell my kids, you know, 60, well, you know, when I'm 60 or 20, 30 years from now that I participated in. It was quite an experience, and the FDLE made it as uncomfortable as possible. You know, they would turn off the AC and make it incredibly hot. You know, they would continuously put pressure on us, you know, give us these mean kind of looks. And so it was beautiful and at the same time very, very uncomfortable. But I wouldn't trade it in for anything. And it kind of showed me my own power. And I really found myself in there and found my voice at the Capitol. So it's a very beautiful experience.
And I think for a lot of people, that would have been perhaps their first glimpse of the Dream Defenders, the first time maybe they'd heard of the group. Mm-hmm. Is that really where you feel the Dream Defenders kind of came into their own and became more kind of nationally recognized?
Yeah, definitely. I believe that the Takeover Florida gave us that notoriety. We also, you know, have done other actions elsewhere, but, you know, Takeover Florida, especially, you know, right after Zimmerman was acquitted, was, you know, really gave us that notoriety. When you oftentimes heard in the media that African Americans and people of color were going to, you know, go riot or mm-hmm. Destroy our communities, we took that anger, took that rage, and placed it in an avenue where we can actually win concrete victories from. So, yeah, I believe that's where we kind of took off.
And you had support of some pretty high-profile folks, too, like Harry Belafonte, yeah. for example, made an appearance. I mean, yeah. it must have been interesting to have people like that, people who have that long legacy of activism, mm-hmm. you know, within the civil rights movement to come down and sort of show their support for you.
Yeah, it was incredible. From Harry Belafonte to somebody more relevant in our generation, Taleb Kweli, who's another powerful activist slash rapper. And so it was incredible. Like I said, it was beautiful. It's
Do you feel though that from that sit-in, you achieved what you wanted to? Did you feel like you got some concrete results from that?
Yeah, definitely. We secured a meeting with Governor Rick Scott within our third day at the Capitol. You know, we pressured the House Speaker, Will Weatherford, to call a subcommittee hearing on Stand Your Ground. And that's kind of where, you know, the Capitol is kind of where we drafted Trayvon's Law. So, you know, we definitely got some concrete victories from it.
And now special committees within the Florida legislature took up some of the changes to the so-called Stand Your Ground law. Of course, some of those changes were articulated with the governor's task force. Mm-hmm. Do you feel, though, that the Dream Defenders can take some credit to moving that forward?
Yeah, definitely. You know, we're the ones who kind of push for the subcommittee hearing on Stand Your Ground. And so, you know, like I said, that's one of the concrete victories that we did have. And so, you know, we're really pushing for the complete repeal of Stand Your Ground. And if that's not possible, then we are advocating like a serious, serious reform of Stand Your Ground so that no more Trayvon Martins or no more Jordan Davises, you know, will happen within our state.
You're listening to 90.7 News. This is Intersection. I'm Matthew Petty. I'm joined in the studio by Joshua McConnell. We're talking about Dream Defenders. Joshua is the president of the Dream Defenders chapter here at the University of Central Florida, and he was part of the sit-in in Tallahassee after the George Zimmerman murder trial acquittal. Joshua, I want to ask you too, I mean, you talked about how the Florida Department of Law Enforcement tried to make the sit-in as uncomfortable for you as possible, turning off the AC, generally making things not particularly pleasant to be there. But I get the sense, too, there was a bit of backlash from some folks. I mean, for example, there were reports that the protest cost the Florida Department of Law Enforcement upwards of $200,000. And if you read some of the letters to the editor, there were people complaining about, what are these young people doing sitting and wasting taxpayer money? Is it difficult to kind of confront that kind of backlash?
You know, no. I would only imagine, you know, people to have that, or at least a group of people to have that kind of sentiment. But I also feel that if you look at the cost that it took to have our sit-in, and you look at the cost to, you know, maintain the prison industrial complex within the United States or within Florida, and the price that it costs to hold just one individual in prison, it is makes the cost of the sit-in relatively look really, really, relatively small compared to what, you know, we're advocating. So if we can abolish you know, the prison industrial complex, then, like I said, that price is very insignificant. The price of it took to pay the FDLE to watch us, and everything else that it took to have that price. So, like I said, I would imagine a group of folks to have that sentiment. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, what about for you personally? I mean, if you had people come up to you and either say, good on you for sitting in, or say, what were you doing? That was a mistake.
Yeah. No, everyone that I've encountered has congratulated us for sitting in. You know, like I said, our generation, you know, or at least what people depict of our generation, is very apathetic. You know, we don't really care about the issues that plague our communities. But that was, you know, that was a defining moment where folks saw our generation rise up, you know, rise up and kind of emulate the civil rights movement. And so everyone that I've encountered has really congratulated us and has said that, you know, we're the, which is a big, you know, big, I guess, example to compare us with, but said that, you know, we're the new SNCC. And so we're definitely learning from, you know, the civil rights movement to make a more unconquerable movement heading before us. So
Do you get that sense, though? I mean, talking about people you talk to from, you know, college age students, do you feel that there really is that sense of apathy, or do you think there is a real appetite from your generation for the kind of direct action that you took part in up in Tallahassee?
There's definitely appetite for it. You know, we, like I said, we look at the cases of Trayvon Martin. We look at Jordan Davis. We look at what has happened to Marissa Alexander, what has happened to Israel Hernandez in Miami. And we know that there's an open season for our lives. And so we are definitely, you know, hungry to create that change within Florida and to create that change within the United States as a whole. So we are far from apathetic, as has shown.
And talking a little bit more about the Dream Defenders and how the organization works, I mean, you hold training seminars for local chapters. What kind of things do you go over?
Well, the foundation of Dream Defenders is built on relational organizing and strategic direct action. And so we, you know, kind of start off with the basics of what an organizer is, what constitutes an organizer, how does an organizer go about, you know, getting those concrete victories. And so our generation isn't really familiar, I would say, with, you know, organizing. Mm-hmm. And so we kind of break down the process of what an organizer is and the steps to getting victories and getting those concrete wins.
And talking about organizers, of course, you have a pretty good example of somebody who was an organizer and now is the president of the United States.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at the civil rights movement, there was organizers. If you look at SNCC, those were organizers. And so we definitely have a model to emulate. And so it's just now tuning, you know, that to our generation and to what's happening now. So, like I said, Dream Defenders is built on relational direct action organizing.
Mm-hmm. What part does social media play in all this too?
Social media, that's especially for our generation, is a very, very powerful tool. You know, social media is how we called folks to participate in the sit-in at the Capitol. And, you know, when FDLE made it incredibly hard, you know, we took to the phones you know, tweeted everybody how deplorable the situation was at the Capitol. I know one time, and this was when I left, they wouldn't allow food in there past 5 o'clock. And so on my way back to Orlando, I looked at my phone and I saw them chanting, you know, for food. And so it's a very, very powerful tool.
Is that
if
really
used correctly?
Yeah, I mean, has that really changed the way groups like the Dream Defenders operate in 2013?
It's definitely added a component for us to, or an avenue for us to go down. And so, yeah, like I said, if used correctly, it's a very, very powerful tool.
What's next for the Dream Defenders then? Aside from having Trayvon's Law passed, what are the next steps for the group?
It's our voter registration and getting those 61,550 individuals registered and voting and engaged in the political process.
Mm-hmm. I've been speaking to Joshua McConnell. He's the president of the Dream Defenders chapter at the University of Central Florida. Joshua, thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you. Thank you.
Up next, Charlie Crist wants to return to the governor's mansion. 90.7's political commentators Dick Batchelor and Lou Fry talk about the gubernatorial race and other political issues impacting Florida. I'm joined by 90.7's political commentators Lou Fry and Dick Batchelor. Lou Fry is a former Republican congressman. He's the founder of the Lou Fry Institute for Politics and Government at the University of Central Florida. Lou Fry, welcome to the program.
Delighted to be back and delighted we had a great symposium.
Dick Batchelor is a former Democratic State House representative. He's also the founder and president of the Dick Batchelor Management Group. Dick, welcome back.
It's great to be back. Thank you.
Well, it seems we've been talking about this for months, but Charlie Crist officially announced his bid for governor last week, running as a Democrat, of course. Dick Batchelor, do Florida Democrats breathe a sigh of relief?
To some extent. I think there were some people who were supporting Senator Nan Rich, who's a wonderful lady, was a Democratic leader in the House and the Senate, currently is. And but she's just not getting any traction, not raising any money. On the other hand, you've got another school of thinkers who think anybody but Scott would be great, including Charlie Crist. And then you had some who thought Bill Nelson might throw his hat in the ring at the last minute. But Charlie Crist, if he's in, he's the nominee. The one thing Lou and I think we agree on is that the fact is it takes millions and millions of dollars to get just name recognition in this state. You're in five media markets. They're very expensive. But the one advantage Charlie Crist has, you know, he's been governor, he's been attorney general, he's been commissioner of education. He's got the name recognition. So he's there. So he can be a very formidable force, I think, in competing with the incumbent, Mr. Scott.
And in case you'd forgotten, his face has been plastered all over those billboards along the sides of the major roads
right.
in his
if
current job.
If you drive to Turnpike in 95 and 75, you'll see Charlie Crist, Morgan & Morgan.
I should have counted the signs, but it was such a bad ball game, I didn't want to count anything.
Well, Lou Fry, let me ask you, Florida Republicans have been preparing for this for some time, of course, but does their strategy change now that he's officially in the race?
No, I don't think it changes. People know he's going to run. Went on the premise that he would run. Look, the people in this state are wonderful people, but they're really not that involved in civics. Like 40% of them don't know the three branches of government. And what you're saying to a lot of people is, boy, Charlie's flipped Florida's and this is really going to be a real problem and so forth. I don't think so. I really don't think so. And if he gets the money to run, he'll run a good campaign. Charlie's got a good, very wide political background, probably as wide as anybody that's been in politics in the state. So the question comes down is, can he raise the money? And can he get the money out of South Florida? Because I think it's going to be more difficult maybe to get it here. And if he raises the money, he's going to be in the ball game. And if he doesn't raise the money, then I don't know what I would run Dick Batchelor.
Well, let me tell you, he's been accused of changing positions, which he has, and changing party, which he has. But also, we have a governor who's trying to reinvent himself. You know, he came in, he wasn't that much in favor of K-12 education. Now he wants to run as the education governor. He's came in with the support of the Tea Party, and now he's moved away from the Tea Party. So everybody's trying to reinvent themselves and get to the middle. Mm-hmm. But the real question is, notwithstanding Charlie Crist's name recognition, he's going to have to raise some money. He can't get it from the traditional very large contributors that were Republican. They won't give to him anymore. And can he curry enough favor and belief from major Democratic fundraisers to raise the money? Because it's going to take a substantial amount of money. You know, the incumbent says he's going to spend $100 million. He's going to spend a lot of that attacking Charlie Crist. So it's going to be a knockdown, drag-out fight. It ain't going to be pretty.
Do you think he's going to have trouble raising that $100 million, as I think Scott says
yes,
he's going to raise?
Yes, I think he will. And a big advantage he has, though, he has such great name recognition. Most of that money goes to spend for name recognition. So I don't think people are going to wonder who the two candidates are. I think they're going to know. So it's going to be about issues, but it will be a very, very negative campaign.
I mean, what does this mean for Nan Rich? Does she have any shot at all at this point?
Well, she finally launched her first commercial, but I think it was basically a YouTube commercial and didn't get much play. She got some media play for having launched a commercial, nice commercial. Ironically enough, it features, not ironically enough, but interestingly enough, it features all women testifying how great Nan Rich is. Not one man's in the commercial anyplace. But the problem is she does not have any name recognition. She's going around trying to do retail politics, going to these small Democratic clubs and all, but not raising any money. And I will tell you, I think, not like or dislike Charlie Crist, you have to admit, he is the best retail politician I have seen in recent history. He knows how to politics. So she's going to have a very tough time. Hers is all about money at this point, no name recognition.
Yeah. And the Republican campaign is not about really the governor's race. It's about who's going to take the governor's place. Mm-hmm. And I think people are positioning themselves, and the cabinet members are doing that. So you got a race within a race really going on. And when somebody can write a check like that, fortunately or unfortunately, depends, I guess, what side you're on, it makes it very, very, very difficult to run against it. And it's hard to pick up anybody when they're looking at the papers and you're not raising any money and the other person is. Long way up and time, not that much time left.
Very good point, because the cabinet members, all three cabinet members that we all know want to be governor in 4 years, and they had no opposition until recently, and now each cabinet member has at least one opponent. So now they've got to raise the money and spend a lot of money. They have to win really big because, as Lou said, they're really running for governor in 4 years. They're not really running for re-election to attorney general or CFO.
Mm-hmm. When you talk about the money, though, I mean, Rick Scott sank a lot of his own fortune into the race for governor in the first go-round. Does he need to do that again this time?
I don't know how much he's got sitting in the bank. I assume he's got a lot sitting in the bank, and I think that he can probably write a check for $100 million to win the state.
Mm-hmm. He spent about $78 million last time of his own money. Remember, he also refused to meet with editorial boards and a untraditional campaign. and it was really on money. And the fact is, Alex Singh came in very close, was spending substantially less money than that. So he's going to have to spend the money in, but it always begs the question if you're prepared to write another check for $70 million. But I can assure you one thing. If I was prepared to write a $78 million check, I wouldn't be governor. I would just sit by my pool and have the governor come see me.
That's right. And he would.
And he would for $78 million.
Well, let's just move on to something else concerning, I guess, Charlie Griss, at least Morgan & Morgan. The Florida GOP are pushing now to remove the medical marijuana initiative off the 2014 ballot. State Attorney General Pam Bondi filing an advisory opinion to the Florida Supreme Court warning against the initiative's language. Commentators are saying that a bill like this will get young people to the polls in 2014, and that could hurt Rick Scott's chances at re-election, some pollsters think. Do you think this argument holds any weight, Lou Fry?
Yeah, but look at the young people. I helped write the 18-year-old vote amendment in the Congress and got it through. And we got young people to vote, and we knew one thing, that they would probably not vote, but they would not register much, and they wouldn't vote much. This has been the trend, but we thought they should have the right to vote. If you're getting shot at, you ought to have the right to, mm-hmm. you know, to vote at least. So what happens in our state and with the millennial generation, which are the younger group from up to 30 years of age now, with the millennial generation, last time 47% registered and 21% voted. So they were really a non-player. And when they came here and we had this reception for them here with the young kids and kicked the can back to Washington, that they asked me, why aren't we giving more attention? And I said, pretty simple. It's a political game. There's political clout that you have and your political bank account. And you're not going to spend it in somebody who isn't going to register and then isn't going to vote. And if you really want to play, get organized, make yourself known. But they've got a way to go.
Mm-hmm. A toke for a vote. I don't know how that's going to work out. But two schools of thought. One is that John Morgan, obviously, in the press recently, basically says the reason he's pushing medical marijuana because of the suffering that his father went through, which he thought would be unnecessary, and his brother, who's paraplegic. But then the challenge comes along by saying that constitutionally, in the proposed constitutional amendment, it's more than single source, which you can't do, number one. And number two, it really, according to Pam Bondi and others who oppose it, really is more open, more liberal, if I might use that term, mm-hmm. on the use or prescription of marijuana. But politically, will it drive people to the polls? Maybe so, but I think Lou makes a very good point. The young people really don't vote. Now, however, having said that, the statewide polling on this issue, medical marijuana, is about 73% of people are in favor of it. So if it gets on the ballot, it's going to pass, and it will turn out voters.
And presumably that 75% or so, that's across the spectrum, not just the young folks.
I agree. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. 73 to 75% support it, and I think you get a turnout for it. And it can't hurt but help Charlie Crist in his race.
I think that's a fair analysis of it, and the people who will vote for that probably are not part of the conservative right wing of the Republican Party. I don't know. I haven't seen and checked all the polls, but it wouldn't surprise me if that's the way it plays out.
Well, let's move to, elections across the country. Now, last week there were a couple of surprising results. Virginia voted in a Democratic governor. New Jersey Republican Governor Chris Christie, very popular, of course, but he carried that entire blue state of New Jersey. And then Tea Party candidate Dean Young lost to Bradley Byrne in the Alabama congressional special election. What do you think this says about the political landscape looking ahead to the 2016 presidential election, Lou Fry?
Well, now somebody asked me, to the Republicans, who's leading the Republican campaign? I got something to say. You know, we had nobody up till the election, and now Christie's leading. He's from a state that's a very difficult state. I grew up in, know a little bit about the politics there. Really surprised. He did a great job of preparing for that election over the last 2 or 4 years, and I think that you really have to look at him as a Republican front runner in it. Wonder who's going to jump in and go after him. He seems to be able to handle the right, and he certainly is more of a centrist Republican, and we'll see in the next 2 or 3 months before Christmas if anybody's really going to dig their heels in and get serious about the Republican side.
And American public is very fickle, too, when it comes to that. Look, I remember Marco Rubio was on the front page of Time magazine, the savior of the Republican Party. Now Chris Christie is the savior of the Republican Party. Mm-hmm. And the one's a Tea Party candidate, the other one is not. And it's going to be interesting to see how he takes on Ted Cruz and Rand Paul and others to try to compete in the primary. The problem is, and Lou knows about this as much as I do, if not more, you got Iowa and you got South Carolina. Yeah. Can a quote, moderate like Christie win in Iowa or South Carolina? Or does he bypass the caucus in the first primary and try to win someplace else. One, two, the example used at the congressional race, what's happened to the Republican Party now is you've got economic conservatives and social conservatives. You always have had. Now, the Tea Party are really the social conservatives and fiscal conservatives. But the problem is now organizations like the National Federation of Manufacturers and Chamber of Commerce are now saying, look, we have to play in these primaries because the Tea Party is playing in the primaries and beating incumbent Republicans. And so they were heavily involved and won that race. They probably outspent the Tea Party candidate 8 or 9 to 1, but mm-hmm. they won that. So what you're going to see now is people like Karl Rove and all trying to recruit moderate candidates to run in these primaries or preserve the incumbents because the Tea Party has defeated 2 or 3 Republican U.S. senators.
I talked to some Republican fundraisers and that, that's something we're going to do in Washington and that. And the difference is this time the Republicans are going to get involved in the primaries.
Right.
The Republican money groups are going to get involved in the primaries. And they found out they made a mistake and they're going to put money in. So I think you're going to probably have a better selection of candidates on the Republican side. And remember, we don't know what's happening with the Obamacare or what's going to go on and so forth. I hope they work it out for all our sakes. But assuming it doesn't get going too well, you're going to have a president who you don't want to run up and throw your arms around and get a picture taken. This reminds me of Watergate, Nixon, because when that happened and the president, when you go to the White House, you go somewhere, you had an excuse, you didn't go. You wouldn't ride in Air Force One even. Mm-hmm. When I had the university, the president come down here and speak at the university, I was the only one on Air Force One. Normally, you can't turn people away. They're standing at the door trying to get on. And so you've got that fact going on. And remember, the president's elected. He ain't going to be elected anymore. But I'm running. I got to run for 2 years or 6 years. And I want to go back to the Congress. The president doesn't really care that much about me because I can't help him anymore. And I just want to get a clear shot at it. And I'd want to be clean. I don't want to say too negative, but I don't want to hug them.
Yeah, the Democrats had a lead here when the government shut down, when the Republicans are getting blamed for it. And then you see it, again, the fickleness of it. It changes back now. Obamacare is unpopular with most of the voters right now, if you look at any polls out there. So in midterm elections, traditionally the party out of power, you know.
Yeah. 72 seats, by the way.
Picks up seats.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, just finally, Dick Batchelor, last week a Florida House legislative panel struck down a bill to repeal Stand Your Ground. Some of the legislature have vowed to amend the law instead. I mean, was what happened last week any surprise to you? And do you think that an amendment is likely?
It was not a surprise, and it only got one vote. Now, it was Mr. Smith's bill basically to rescind or to repeal Stand Your Ground. Senator David Simmons, on the other hand, here locally, was willing to make a few changes, and I'm going to call them tweaks because they're minor changes to Stand Your Ground. Mm-hmm. He still has that piece of legislation, and I think he'll still move it. He's a senior senator. And there might be some compromise, but you won't see any major changes to Stand Your Ground at all.
That's been clear from the start. As soon as that thing happened, it was just it's just another good effort. I mean, a legislature can fight for what he wants for, but in terms of getting it changed in the law, that isn't going to happen, at least this time.
Do you think this will be the last we hear of Stand Your Ground then after this upcoming legislative session?
You tell me what's going to happen, and I'll tell you if it's going to be the last. If nothing happens and it's quiet, you obviously won't hear too much. If this happens once more, it'll double the fury that I think it had before.
Mm-hmm. Now you got bills now that are coming out of the woodwork where it was, you know, it makes it legal to discharge a firearm and do the air without shooting at somebody, and law enforcement's going crazy. What are you trying to do? But that's based on another Stand Your Ground law. Excuse me, a case in Jacksonville where the woman really discharged her firearm in the air because her husband was assaulting her along with the kids, and she was found guilty. She didn't have a Stand Your Ground defense, and she got 20 years automatic sentencing. So you'll see some changes in that law, but Stand Your Ground, you won't see any changes.
I've been speaking to 90.7's political commentators Dick Batchelor and Lou Fry. Dick Batchelor is a former Democratic State House representative and the head of the Dick Batchelor Management Group. Nice speaking with you, Dick.
Thank you.
And Lou Fry, of course, former Republican congressman and attorney at Lowndes, Drostick, Doster, Cantor and Reed. Thank you very much for joining us.
Always a pleasure.
The conversation about what's happening in Florida continues online at wmfe.org/intersection. There you can also sign up for our weekly podcast. Support for Intersection comes from our listeners. Brendan Byrne is assistant producer. I'm Matthew Petty. Thanks for listening.